If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Wildcats on WGN Radio.
Go Cats.
The hockey season is starting. Yeah, no kidding. Go Cats. The bridges are lifting today to let the boats come back in. There are 27 bridges in Chicago along the river that will lift today to let the boats come in off of the lake and go back to wherever they go in the off season. Now, it's not just today. There'll be several weeks where they do this, but that begins today. Here's a good trivia question. If you really know your Chicago, name the 27 bridges in order.
In order, really.
The one below us.
Columbus.
That's all I got.
Okay, the one between, I'm not going to do it, but I was just thinking about it, Lakeshore Drive. Then the next one below us is Columbus Avenue, then Michigan Avenue. Now you're just working west across the city, Wabash, State. It goes all the way to Ashland. So somebody needs to make a song or something about that, the 27 bridges.
I was going to say, that sounds like a band itself, 27 Bridges.
27 Bridges.
You know, John, I'm looking on the internet right now, and there is a website called ChicagoLoopBridges.com, because I was going to try to cheat. But then when you said in order, I'm like, oh, that's messed up.
That's messed up. By the way, speaking of making a song out of something, I planned later, but since Lou Manfredini brought it up, let me just do 90 seconds of this. The story about Mary Schmeek's song, because it really is quite an interesting story. 20 years ago, as I mentioned to Lou a little bit ago, this summer, the number one song in the UK 20 years ago this summer was Wear Sunscreen. The BBC this week dropped an hour-long documentary podcast about the story of that song, which was written by the Chicago Tribune Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Mary Schmeek. 22 years ago, she wrote the column, her imagined speech to the graduating class of 1997. And then Baz Luhrmann, the Australian producer and director who made Moulin Rouge, Strictly Ballroom, one of my family's favorite movies, William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, he turned that column into a spoken word song. The column itself was almost instantly attributed to Kurt Vonnegut. That has nothing to do with this story, but it's just another weird wrinkle to this strange story. To this day, Mary Schmeek has no idea who or how or why that happened, that people said it's Kurt Vonnegut. But the song becomes an international hit, and the advice in it so resonates even today that two decades later, it's getting the BBC treatment. There is a 7-minute version, a 5-minute version. You'll remember it, I hope. I'll give you a 90-second version.
Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindsides you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone.
Yeah, I always laugh at that part. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Isn't that true? So the song goes on like that. And you can kind of pick the pieces that most help you. Mary and I were chuckling. Lou was too. But I think you now hear there's only two things in there that I don't think travel well. One is get rid of your bank statements, because nobody has a checkbook that they... Nobody follows bank statements anymore. It's all electronic. Mary wondered if people write love letters anymore. We should if we don't. So there it is. The best ways to consume that are just Google Mary Schmeek, wear sunscreen, get the original column in the Tribune. Listen to the podcast where she describes that story to us. That's at WGNradio.com on the John Williams page. Or you can just Google the BBC hour-long documentary about it, because that's pretty amazing, too. Did you guys see the National Toy Hall of Fame has the new nominees, the toys that are going to be inducted or nominated? The question is, should they get in or not? And shockingly, the Matchbox car is not yet in the National Toy Hall of Fame. As a young man who played with Matchbox cars for... That's probably the first toy I remember, and continued to play with and collect them, and then Hot Wheels into my, I'm going to say, middle to late teens. I think I had some Christmases at the age
late 30s.
I'm going to say I had some Christmases deep into high school.
Do you hear a little rattling coming through his end? On the, it's a little car going when he gets worked up in an argument.
Who inducts these toys? Are they the previously inducted toys?
No, the toy writers.
Oh, of course,
it's,
of course.
It's a combination of the toys and the toy writers.
Of course. No, I love stuff like that. Like, I'd love to see the Mascot Hall of Fame. I would love to see the Toy Hall of Fame.
Good. So what's in there? I'm trying to gauge how
ball,
outraged you should be by what's already
frisbee,
in there.
Slinky.
Slinky have been in there.
Is it? Do they do name brand items or just general?
Well,
is
top, the
Furby
top
in there?
The top is in there. Is it nominated this year? The top,
you the know, top just, is just getting nominated this year?
How did that happen? I mean, really,
it's been a long time coming for the top.
We just engineer things to be mad about.
I would appreciate it if you guys would just think about this like I'm thinking about it. The top, I mean, probably that has to be maybe one of mankind's first toys.
Right.
Ball, top, blocks.
Jacks.
Like, jacks.
I feel like blocks in the beginning were more tools. So how could you have fun with them?
Well,
who's
to
say?
I don't have answers to these questions, Griffin, but I know that blocks were an awesome, like, for instance, if you had a set of blocks right now, I would sit on the floor and start to make bridges and towers with them.
Okay.
And you
we can't
would,
do that right now.
No. So what is the, here's my question to you. 312-981-7200. Griffin, don't call in. Joe, I'm not sure I care what you think either now, but what is the toy from your youth, if you could capture just one, that you would still play with? I have many, but what would be the one for you? Now think about that for a second. And by the way, nominated this year, the smartphone, because it is on that that you did Words with Friends or whatever the games are you play on your smartphone.
Now that feels wrong.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I couldn't care less about the Toy Hall of Fame, and yet even I object to that being submitted as an inductee.
No, I agree with the smartphone, or I disagree with the smartphone going in. But so are other former, or not former, but video game consoles, are they in then?
I don't know if the... Griffin, look it up. I'm
I feel
sorry,
like it should be games, specific games
right.
that would go in. Well,
right,
so.
I feel like that's a whole other branch of the Toy Hall of Fame then. Honestly. No, I mean...
You know, I don't envy the guy that's got to deal with these serious stuff.
Well, anyway, for me, and I think for generations of people that take this conversation seriously, Legos have to be in there. The Monopoly game has to be in there. When I asked some of the women I was working with yesterday, Jen DeSalvo, Elif Garris, they instantly said Barbie. I said, which one? They said it didn't matter. But for me, it would probably be the Hot Wheels or Matchbox cars. But you only get one now, unless you're hosting the show, then I might bring my blocks as well. I know. It's 10:20 on WGN. 312. Oh my goodness, people are calling in. Go reverse order. What was the last year's nominees or entries into the National Toy Hall of Fame?
So you're asking 2018?
Right.
The Magic 8-Ball, Pinball, and Uno.
Only three. What about the year before?
2017 was the game Clue, a paper airplane, and a wiffle ball. Okay, but here's the thing. In 2016, right? In 2016, Dungeons and Dragons, Fisher-Price Little People, And then the third one is, I mean, it's hardly even a toy. It's more of an operating system. It's a swing. It's kind of cool because when they first started it in 1998, they're like, okay, we got to get Barbie and we got to get crayons. We got to get Legos, marbles. We got to get all this stuff in. And then probably year by year, they're like, boy, there's a lot of toys. There's a lot of toys. And the one I was going to go with when you asked about if I could still play or if I could play with it right now.
Oh, pardon me. Sure. Yeah.
I was going to go with Silly Putty, and that got inducted in 2001. That was one of the early years.
Well, that must validate your feelings. How nice for you. Griff, what did you want to play, Griff? Is there a toy that resonates with you that you only have one?
Honestly, nothing head and shoulders above the rest. I had toys that I enjoyed, but there's not one that I look back on so fondly.
I don't want to say Griffin is super cerebral, but I think his toy, if he could only have one in his life, would be subscription to The New Yorker.
Yeah, but not back then.
That's just not where I'm going with this.
I didn't say that. You put that in my... I don't appreciate, actually, that... I enjoyed toys when I was a kid. I just don't... I don't have one head and shoulders above the rest. We have people calling in who do.
Okay. Vivian, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Viv. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Good morning. Yeah, to this day, I would play with a Slinky, but it can't be one of those plastic ones. It has to be metal. And give me a flight of stairs and a Slinky, and I'm all set for life.
Thank you for the call. I completely agree about metal. That's the thing. You get a new set of Lincoln Logs, not the same wood. Doesn't smell the same, doesn't feel the same. It's disappointing to me. Ditto Matchbox cars and Hot Wheels. Thank you, Vivian. Bruce, you're on WGN.
Well, you just said it. It's Lincoln Logs, but I used to combine it with blocks and HO cars and blowing them up and shooting rubber bands at them.
Yeah, I used to set my army men around the corner on the Lincoln log cabins I would make, which was a complete anachronism there. I mean, you've got, you know, a World War II soldier shooting around a log cabin, but whatever.
And the two onesies would make a cannon.
yes, they would. Yes, they would. I'm completely there with you. Thank you, Bruce.
Welcome.
I think we should do an event. I hate to sound like Lou Manfredini, because only Lou Manfredini can, but we should do a play date for adults. You know, we'll get McCormick Place, and we'll just put a carpet out, and then we'll just have, okay, over there in the southeast corner, Lincoln Logs and Army Men. In the north corner, we're playing Hot Wheels. Go. You would see 60-year-olds sprinting. Woohoo! Ha-ha-ha-hee! Paul, you're on WGN Radio. What's the toy that you'd bring back if you only had one for you? What would it be, sir?
The Labyrinth. I remember trying to get that little metal ball using the two dials on the sides of the box to go around the holes and not fall in the holes. Frustrating as heck, but a lot of fun. And if you could do it, you felt such a sense of accomplishment.
I bought one of those a few years ago just because I thought that was the coolest. And you're right. If you can get to all, 56 little holes in the board, and you got to move the table around to get the ball to go without falling in the hole. If you do that, I think you actually get admitted into some colleges and universities. It's such an accomplishment.
I wouldn't be surprised.
In this day and age, you're absolutely right. Cheryl, you're on WGN. What's your toy, Cheryl?
It's kind of a toss-up, but the Easy Bake Oven would be my number one. Because I still don't know how that little light bulb actually cooked the cake, but they were amazing.
They were good brownies, weren't they?
Yes, but the Weebles are the other one. It's a toss-up. Does anyone remember Weebles?
Sure, they wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yes, exactly. So at McCormick Place, you got to have a Weeble Corner, and I'm there.
Thank you. I think I'm close to actually pulling this thing off. Dan, you're on WGN. What is it for you, sir?
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's got to be the Handy Andy Toolbox. I got one when I was five, and I went on to be a jet engine mechanic in the Air Force.
Who knew? Who knew?
The Handy Andy Toolbox.
Oh, boy, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Boom.
Getting a little choked up there. 10:30, WGN Radio News is next. Thank you, Pam. Did you want to play a long toy from your youth you could?
Problem is I had so many toys. Okay, so Etch-a-Sketch.
Nice.
Pong.
You know, I said just one, but keep going.
I'm sorry. I skipped all over that. Pong. The Barbie dollhouse that had three sections. I think I put that together all by myself when I was like 8 years old. Nice. I love that thing. Nice. And I am now a do-it-yourselfer, a big do-it-yourselfer. So, yeah.
So those sort of shaped or informed you. So in the National Toy Hall of Fame, the nominees, I didn't mention this earlier, but just to put a bow on this thing, the finalists are the smartphone upon which you can play games.
Boo.
Like you guys don't think
boo.
That's right.
But what struck me, what bothers me so much about that is that as people list their favorite childhood toys, they are things that consume you and remove you from other parts of your life and you're focused on them.
Mm-hmm.
The games live on the phone with everything else that is not fun in game. It is stress and life. And it shouldn't be like that.
And we're overthinking this, Griffin?
Wow. I mean, that is deep. For real.
It can be in the Technology Hall of Fame. Don't put it in the Toy Hall of Fame.
Coloring books
it's not a toy.
Are nominated this year. Matchbox Cars, Fisher-Price Corn Popper, a little thing that the toddlers push. With the wheels.
Wow, yeah. I hate that thing.
They make a noise. The smartphone made the list because it's platform for millions of games and has revolutionized the way we play. Risk, Jenga, Magic the Gathering was also nominated. That's a card game. Care Bears, My Little Pony, Nerf Blasters, yeah, baby, Masters of the Universe action figures featuring He-Man and She-Ra round out the list.
What about Teddy Ruxpin? Where's Teddy Ruxpin?
Maybe in a previous
Do you guys
year.
Remember that?
I remember that.
Yeah. We used to put Prince tapes in it and try to see if we could get it to, like, you know, when Prince sings backwards on the end of one of those things, and one of them exploded. Teddy Ruxpin actually exploded.
No. A lot of texts on this. Light Bright, Red Rider BB Gun.
Yeah.
Johnny Astro.
Uh-huh.
Dave called in. He had an Erector set that he loved, and he is now an engineer, or became an engineer anyway. You know, another story like that.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. Any others that jump out at you on the list, Joe?
Okay, so 2009, I feel like I could really resonate with this year. You talk about generic toys. Ball.
That was a historic year for the Toy Hall of Fame. classic Toy Hall of Fame.
Especially because the first induction in 2009 was Ball. And then the second one was Big Wheel. And then the third one, I want to pull away Silly Putty and put this one for my all-time toy, Nintendo Game Boy. That encapsulated a lot of my youth. Really quick, 2008, Baby Doll, Skateboard, and Stick. Who could forget Stick?
I think that was a thin year for the Toy Hall of Fame.
Somebody texted in and said Sticks and Stones.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is the title of the Dave Chappelle. Isn't that the title of the Dave Chappelle?
That's true, yeah.
New comedy special that just dropped on Netflix. Maybe more about that later on, because he sure does give Jussie Smollett the treatment that he deserves. But I want to actually change tone and course here for just a second and tell you the story of this woman from DeKalb, Illinois. Maybe best we take a break here and then we'll come back with a conversation of the new internet viral sensation. See, are we done with toys, right? Oh yeah, a text just poured in from my wife. She said, I did like the Spirograph. Spirograph.
Great.
Wow. Wow. Joe, did you play with that Spirograph?
Is that when you put the pen in the plastic ring and
yes.
do circles? Yes.
You know, someone called in and said pogo stick, and I did have a time where I got really good at pogo stick and really enjoyed that. It didn't last long. None of them lasted long, but I did have phases, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of us went through that.
Yeah.
So Melissa Blake of DeKalb, Illinois, describes herself as a disabled freelance female journalist. She's got a genetic bone and muscular disorder that has somewhat shaped her appearance and voice, unrelated to any of that. In an op-ed at CNN.com, she recently suggested that we stop following the president on Twitter. We should just ignore his Twitter rants, she said. A conservative YouTuber saw that and commented on it, and then the comments to him about her largely focused on her appearance. She writes, I read posts saying I'm fat, I look like a blobfish, a parade balloon, and a potato with a face. One commenter even wrote that I should be banned from posting photos of myself because I'm too ugly. I won't pretend that those words did not sting, but I knew that I could not let them win. I spoke to her earlier this week.
So I was born with very tight joints. Like my knees were bent all the way back when I was born. And so I've had roughly 26 surgeries in my childhood to correct the joints, to straighten my bones. I also had scoliosis. So I've had a lot of surgeries and hospitalizations. Luckily, I haven't had any surgery in 20 years.
So. Oh, no kidding. So most of that was, how old are you, if I may ask?
38.
You went to Northern Illinois University. You got a degree in journalism. Is that right?
Yes, I graduated in 05. I worked on the school paper.
Do you work today? Are you a journalist now?
I work from home. I've written for Washington Post, New York Times, Glamour, Cosmo.
What was the post you put on CNN that sparked the backlash?
That was actually an op-ed, and it was an op-ed that I wrote at the beginning of August about what if we all unfollowed Trump on Twitter and just didn't pay any attention to his rants, what would happen? And then a conservative YouTuber, and I don't remember his name now, he mentioned me in one of his videos, and then I made a mistake of reading the comments. And it was just thousands of comments of people just attacking my appearance. And they were saying things like I was ugly and I looked like a balloon and I shouldn't post pictures of myself online. And so I thought, well, if they say I shouldn't do it, I'm just going to do it kind of just to spite them and show them that they, you know, can't get the best of me.
What was the picture then that you posted in response?
I learned a long time ago not to respond to them, like, directly. So then I just thought, well, I'm just going to do something positive with this. And so I tweeted, some people have said in response to my op-ed that I shouldn't post pictures of myself. And I said, so I just like to commemorate this occasion with 3 selfies. And so I just posted pictures of myself. I did exactly what they said I shouldn't.
And the pictures were of you smiling.
Yeah.
And what was the reaction to your tweet of you smiling?
I think the reaction I got showed the good side of Twitter, I think. Because as you said, Twitter can be a really dark place, but I kept getting responses to the tweet saying, thank you for bringing some positivity to Twitter and thank you for responding this way. So it was really nice to actually get like messages from people that weren't hateful messages.
As of a few days ago, the Tribune noticed that you had 236,000 likes on that post.
Last I checked, it was almost up to 250 and like 21,000 retweets.
Wow. I hate to put a positive spin on something that started out ugly, but I wonder if your image and your positivity and your teaching us how to handle negativity on Twitter has actually turned out to be a good thing.
I think it has because I, as a writer, I go back and forth with social media. It's something that I need for my job, so it's not like I can just abandon it, but it's also it can be a very dark and cruel place.
I wonder if the response was specifically because you said something about the president. That seems to be a flashpoint for a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's because I've written a few op-eds, the state of our country. All the negative responses have been from people who support him.
And do they attack your position or do they always attack your appearance?
It's never about the content. Like, I welcome criticism if it's based on what I've written, but they always go straight for the baseless attacks on my appearance. That's reflected because he's normalized, to a certain degree, he's normalized this behavior of attacking people, and I think his supporters see that and think that it's okay to react that way, and it's not.
Maybe Twitter feels that it's easier to attack a woman, or is it easier to attack a woman who seems to have some disability, or is all of that not so germane here? It's more that if you attack the president, we're going to hit you back with anything we got.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two. And also, I think with social media, there's so much anonymity that people can hide behind their computer screens.
Well, what did you see more of, attacks at you or positive responses after you posted the three selfies of you smiling?
Thankfully, I saw the latter. I saw more responses to my positivity, which warmed my heart, because I think with the state of things in our country, it's very easy to be cynical. And I noticed myself being kind of negative and cynical. And so it was really nice to see a positive response.
Do any responses stand out per se?
It's interesting. This tweet has really seemed to resonate with people in the UK. I've gotten a lot of notes from people in England saying, oh, I love your selfies. Thank you for helping me find your blog. And I think it's interesting. A lot of people in England, which isn't something I would have necessarily expected.
You know, they have their own version of supernationalism over there. Yeah. I wonder if they related that way.
And also people from Argentina and France and the Netherlands. And it's funny because with this tweet, I didn't really even think that it would go anywhere. It was just a random tweet I posted on Saturday night.
Would you get up Sunday morning? That's the classic story. You know, I put the thing out there. Sometimes it's I made the mistake and tweeted it out there. But in your case, you put this positive little message out there Saturday night.
Yeah.
Sunday morning, did you notice something?
Yeah, I woke up and I had a lot of messages and I had gained like 2,000 Twitter followers. I only had 7,500 followers on Saturday night. And now I'm up to like 47,000. So this is all new to me. I'm not used to this. Like, I'm usually the person writing, not the person being written about.
What's the moral of that story, Melissa?
I think the moral is that people are craving some positivity and a respite from all this negativity.
Amen.
And I think it's not to say that we should ignore what's going on, but we also need to focus on the positive sometimes.
Yeah. Kind of stepped on her there at the end there, but that's a conversation she and I had off the air earlier this week. We broadcast it here today for the first time. That's Melissa Blake, her piece most recently in CNN from DeKalb, Illinois. You go, Melissa. It's 10:57 on WGN, so we'll do the news here in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and by that I mean Pam will do the news here. And then afterwards, the Mincing Rascals, the broadcast of the podcast that's the best in the state, said the Illinois Broadcasters Association. And the gang goes to the Illinois State Supreme Court this time. That's all coming up. Well, if you were going to go to a Northwestern football game, you would order this weather, wouldn't you?
Yes. And I am looking. If somebody has like tickets on the 50-yard line, they just want to, you know, sponsor me, I'm totally willing to go.
Wow. Not, you know, usually when you're making a pitch like that, you'll settle for the 40 or the 35.
Yeah, no,
right.
No,
that was anyone got tickets for behind home plate for the game tonight?
But you know what? You got to aim high in this life. My brothers, right. You must aim high.
Well, I hope those tickets come through for you.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever.
Hey, by the way, speaking of good treatment, Steve Bertrand is gone this week. He's traveling with his travel company that works with the radio station. So a lot of WGN listeners, a couple times a year, travel with Steve Bertrand, and he is in Ireland right now. Probably just landed late last night or early this morning. Our other travel partner is a sponsor, Kelly Cruises. And the next trip that Brenda and I are going to take with Kelly Cruises is going to be next October. Plenty of time to plan a trip with us. If you go to kellycruises.com, all of the details are there. We start in Istanbul. After a couple of days sailing with a stop in Lesbos, we go to a place called Ephesus. Google it. E-P-H-E-S-U-S, Ephesus. It'll be my third time there. And the reason we're doing this trip again, I said, is because I want to go back to Ephesus. It's the most amazing, historic city. Then we go to Santorini. Everybody wants to go to Santorini in the Greek Isles. It's beautiful and fun. And then Athens. And then we go to a place that we've never cruised with Kelly Cruises before, and that's the Dalmatian coast. Everybody will get to see Dalmatians. I don't know what they'll get to see. We'll be the ramparts of Dubrovnik's ancient walled city, a place called Kotor, which is a medieval town. We end with a two-night stay in Venice. Hokey smokes, there's an $800 shipboard credit. And once you get on this ship, everything is included. It's really a fun trip.
And you got to hit up your new Greek friend that you made this summer, the guy that came on the show, Panos.
Oh my gosh, that's
Muzarakis.
Right. Panos Muzarakis, the international Greek singing sensation.
You told him you'd hit him up.
That's right, Griff. I forgot all about that.
Well, you have to remember for another year. So.
And I've got to remember it at all. Okay, so that's... Thanks for the heads up on that. Look at the details this weekend, won't you? KellyCruises.com. Okay, it's 10 after 11 o'clock on WGN Radio. This week, The Mincing Rascals, the award-winning podcast we do at this radio station, features our own Justin Kaufman from WGN Radio, the Tribune's Lisa Donovan. She's a Nebraska transplant, a point that her colleague Eric Zorn will bring up. And you'll also hear from Austin Berg in this replay of part of the podcast. He's from the Illinois Policy Institute. We start on the topic of vaping. I pointed out that this year, nationwide, 2,600 school-aged kids have been shot or killed in the United States. The death toll from vaping is 6. Schaumburg Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy, you heard today, was on with us this week, and he talked about how 20% of high school kids are now vaping, which is a remarkable number to me. But we're looking for some perspective here. The first voice you will hear is our Justin Kaufman.
The government has to step in and say, you can't, this is, we don't know if this is safe. We don't know. It's obviously 450 people that have been sick. 6 have died. So stop selling bubblegum flavors, Cool Ranch Dorito flavors.
But I think it's kind of ridiculous. And I don't like that the party of small government is saying that we should ban flavored air. Essentially, I think it's silly, and I think it's anti-science. The same people who say, one side of the debate is anti-science. This, especially the moral panic around these deaths, which are serious, but a lot of them came from black market vaping cartridges.
Right.
And
yeah,
so now what you're doing with the flavored cartridges is putting those on the black market because they're now illegal and people still want to use
them. It seems like what happened with the 6 deaths had to do with tainted THC oil. It had nothing to do with ECD.
When you see politicians hop on this kind of stuff, it's a diversion. It's squirrel. There are all these other important things going on. No, we can't solve gun violence. No, we're not going to get together on a gun control package. So let's divert the conversation on both sides.
I think that's why I'm having this visceral reaction.
Yeah.
Gun 6 deaths. 2,600 people shot or killed.
Listen, I'm for huge government. I'm not a small government.
What would you rather?
I love
your
huge
kids
government.
Smoke cigarettes or vape?
I wouldn't want them to do either. But the point being that if the gun manufacturers came out with different colors for your gun, and this is your Nicki Minaj gun, this is your Justin Bieber gun, this is everything that is playing towards tweens and teenagers, the government would get involved, so you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think it's about e-cigarettes as a whole. I think it's about the marketing to kids.
I don't want people to think that this is a neutral stance. Like, this doesn't have unintended consequences. These are clear. If you talk to anyone who's an addiction counselor, they will talk about the principle of harm reduction. If you stop doing heroin and start smoking cigarettes, that's a net plus for everybody. And the millions of people who have stopped smoking cigarettes and started to do vaping, and that may be because they like some stupid flavor. They like that it's mint. And making that illegal hurts those people, whereas I think the focus should be on enforcing the rules on the books and not selling these to minors.
And also, let's not forget that these deaths and all this flurry of news about vaping all seems to be related to some one-off contamination of black market vaping devices.
THC.
These things have been on the market in pretty heavy use since, 2015 at least.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this is a huge flurry of news about this. I think it is a one-off problem that needs to be solved. There is maybe a larger issue that we've talked about here, I think, about vaping in schools, and, I guess there are places where they don't have doors on the bathroom stalls anymore because kids are in there vaping. But I share John's reluctance to make this a huge issue when we won't even touch any kind of gun legislation, so...
Think about that.
I think it's beyond just gun legislation. There are all of these moving parts to sort of help solve sort of the gun violence, mass shootings versus what's going on in some of our neighborhoods that are shooting galleries. And that needs to be addressed, too. But that's a long discussion. That's not a snapshot and a quick soundbite.
So the president is now presiding the way I would. If I were watching TV and I were king someday and I saw the vaping thing, I'd go, hey, we got to do something about that. Hokey smokes, I'm president. I can do something about this. So, hey, honey, let's
let's do a thing and say they can't have flavored vapes.
And that's what happened. That's what happened in Michigan. That's their the Michigan governor, who is a Democrat, did this by may have even been executive order. I think it passed through the legislature, but she was the first mover on banning flavored e-cigarettes before Trump.
That's the thing about this, and I'm surprised with you, John. I'm surprised because last week you were defending all the hurricane talk with President Trump.
He's
not the guy who. This isn't out of nowhere. They've been doing congressional hearings. The states have got involved in this. This is not necessarily his thing. This
he said
is
it was Melania's thing.
Yeah, there's been a push. There's been a lobby to push for this. So I don't know if this is necessarily Donald Trump going out on a limb and deciding to tweet something out because he doesn't like flavored e-cigarettes. This has been a push by Washington for quite some time now.
The most awkward utterance by the president of the week, not the lie of the week, but the most awkward utterance was when he referred to his son as Melania's son. Yeah.
But we can't allow people to get sick, and we can't have our youth be so affected. And I'm hearing it, and that's how the first lady got involved. And she's got a son together that is a beautiful young man, and she feels very, very strongly about it.
And I don't know exactly what that was all about. Maybe he was deferring to her, and so he wanted to give her some ownership of this issue, but it was weird.
Such a weird thing. And
then he went on to other topics. Okay, that's part one of our broadcast of the Mincing Rascals podcast. By the way, just a quick point about that. Justin Kaufman was saying that it's not just the Trumps that are behind this, but Congress is behind it, too. And that's why Raja Krishnamurthy was on our show this week, the Schaumburg congressman. And I got to tell you, I don't know if he's surprised, but the pushback from our listeners on text and on the phone calls was not insubstantial. People are like, yeah, this is a problem, and we don't like it either. But you guys are just shutting an industry down when you're banning flavored vapes. And I'm just keeping score here. Instead of everybody going, thank you, a bipartisan congressional and presidential thing, people were not in love with what the president was talking about or what the Congress is thinking about implementing. It's 11:17 on WGN. Part two of the Mincing Rascals comes back to the state of Illinois and our Supreme Court after this. Part two now of the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. Next month, Justice Ann Burke will become the Chief Justice of the Illinois State Supreme Court. She's married to Alderman Ed Burke. The Mincing Rascals take on the wisdom of her new role. Again, the first voice you hear is our Justin Kaufman.
Well, I think about the U.S. Supreme Court. And if you're Justice Roberts or Justice Ginsburg, and you were thinking that their significant other was compromised in some way or had federal indictments on corruption, that would be a story. And there would be questions about whether or not that judge was fit to run. I don't know if that applies necessarily to Ann Burke, because she has been a judge and has not had that stain on her for years and years and years. But I just don't know when both are such big power players in the state of Illinois, if it's how you can separate them. Yeah. That's the issue.
It's not a great look. It's not a conflict of interest because the charges against Burke are federal charges, and she is Illinois State Supreme Court. She is not going to even have to recuse herself in matters involving her husband. It isn't a good look. I'm surprised that her colleagues on the court chose her. It's only a 3-year term. It's not, forever. And you say she was cleared in this judicial inquiry. She was cleared, it's true, but we don't know why.
Exactly.
That is maddening.
They did not explain it. They would not release the content of the investigation.
They say they can't, which is silly to me. I don't know why.
It is really silly to me because the fundraiser letter was on Ed Burke Alderman Burke issued the invitation for a fundraiser for Tony Preckwinkle. And then when Burke got into trouble, Preckwinkle was like, "Oh, okay, it wasn't really him. It was Ann. She and I are best buds, and that she's the one who did it. All her spokespeople were coming out. No, it was Ann. It was Ann's fundraiser. It wasn't Alderman Burke's fundraiser."
I come from two places. I don't know if she should be held responsible for her husband's alleged wrongdoing, but on the other hand, sort of over the years, you look at how much influence Alderman Burke had over judicial slating. He was in charge of judicial slating for the county, and so he had a lot of muscle there. And so those connections could leave people feeling like, okay, am I going to get a fair shake? There is a question about that. When you're dealing with this at home, certainly they're discussing this as a married couple.
I wonder, God, what their dinner conversations must be like.
I think it was totally shameless to put her as the top judicial official in the state. And I know she has a reputation for, and she's done a lot of good things, I'm sure, for the city. And I think Special Olympics is one of them that people always talk about. But that's also why she's such an effective fall person for someone like Tony Preckwinkle. And they say, oh, no, it wasn't Ed. It's Anne, who everybody likes. And it reminds me of when you see, you know, Russian oil oligarchs, if you go to their wiki pages, and these are like bad guys, and on their Wikipedia it's like Evgeny Molotov is a world renowned philanthropist who it's a crime family. It's a crime family, and the political intersection between them, as Lisa suggested, is very well documented, and it's been a conflict of interest on lots of things over time. It's not just this. There's plenty of examples.
Okay, so what if, but just the Ed Burke fundraiser, what if they had found that, yeah, you shouldn't have done it? What's so compromising about that?
This is kind of the problem with the whole thing, is that you have someone in a position of significant judicial power who's supposed to be impartial intervening in political outcomes. Just one example, and this is like small stuff, but the food truck regulations in Chicago, which were voted on by Alderman Ed Burke. Ann Burke issued the majority opinion in that case defending them, and her husband voted for them. Or when you talk about the union substitute teacher for a day who gets a full pension, which the union then donates to Ed Burke, and then Ann Burke rules in their favor. Those types of things are inevitable.
She shouldn't have even been present for this fundraiser.
Right.
Shouldn't have been held at her house. She should have been. I mean, it's a violation of judicial ethics, I think. I would like to know why they decided it wasn't before this goes forward.
And then
is that unreasonable?
I think so. And I think, too, you have to kind of go back and see there are a number of other intersections, too. Sort of this fundraiser happens, and then suddenly the Burke son needs a job, and he was having problems over at the sheriff's office. He was about to be dropkicked. So I believe she hired him for a bit.
$100,000 a year job.
All of this sort of back scratching, it doesn't bode well. What if there's a case involving Tony Preckwinkle that rises up to the highest court?
All right, I'm going
to
reword my introduction. She's a terrible person, and she shouldn't have done the thing, and it's all terrible. I just want to bring up one other sad and serious topic. Last week we talked about murder in Chicago and the clearance rate, the fact that crimes don't get solved. And Austin, you said that, I think you said 1 in 6, maybe it's 1 in 8 of the homicides in the city get solved. I believe in the podcast you actually said shootings by police. You meant police trying to solve shootings,
right,
correct?
Exactly.
And then Eric pointed out Alex Kotlowitz's book, An American Summer, and the consequences of those who do testify in a murder case can be dire, can be deadly. This week, the Tribune reported that Treja Kelly testified at a murder trial of her cousin. Her cousin had been shot and killed. And Kelly's testimony helped put the killer away Sunday night. And she was walking in the same area, and she was shot dead 3 times in the head, several times in the torso. It's not exactly clear what the motive of the shooter was. The Tribune's reporting that she and the shooter got into an argument before the bullets were fired. But, boy, it sure looks like exactly what you were talking about last week.
It's the takeaway that's the important thing here, and what people in that community are seeing and concluding when they see about her murder.
Eric Zorn continues there from the Chicago Tribune, along with his colleague Lisa Donovan. You also hear my colleague at WGN Radio, Justin Kaufman, and a guy named Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute. That story, by the way, that we're referencing there is, again, on page 1, as I recall, of today's Chicago Tribune. Just such a strange story. We've been following that on The Mincing Rascals. It's free wherever you get your finer podcasts. And remember, you can find it on Spotify, or just say to your smart speaker, play The Mincing Rascals podcast. Pam Griff, Joe, I think you all would agree, if you know me even a little bit, that I'm not a person given to hysteria.
Okay.
I'll pause while you all nod silently, but there's one thing about which I'm sometimes inclined to get a little hysterical, and that is near miss with asteroids. And your story about that asteroid that's just zooming by Earth, that's the size of Willis Tower, it's doing 14,000 miles an hour, and it's coming within 14 times the distance of us to the moon. Sometimes they come in between us and the moon. Think about that.
True.
This one's 3 million miles out. It's 14 times the distance to the moon. So, it didn't even come close. Here's how close it came. If you were infinity away, which is where these things come from, and you were traveling for a zillion years, which is what happens. If you were the gods and you were saying, let's play golf with asteroids and the hole is Earth, this would be a gimme. They would let you pick it up. This is a bullseye on Earth, 14 million miles away, 3 million miles, 14 times the distance to the moon. The thing is the size of Willis Tower. If that hit over us, boom.
Lollapalooza would be canceled. Everything
I know.
Would be over.
Say it ain't so.
I just want to remark upon that and then think we need to, as a society, as a species, come up with some way to fight these things.
They did in Armageddon. We're good. They got the plan.
You know,
yippee-ki-yay.
Send Bruce Willis up there.
Oh yeah, that's fine. You're not going to be asking for Bruce Willis to come out of retirement when
I understand the relative nature of the point you're making, that in the vastness of the universe, 3 million miles is very close
it's
to Earth.
Home run.
But it is still 3 million miles.
And what if they're off?
That is kind of far. I don't freak out about these things.
What's the margin of error? You know, it's not one of those plus or minus
4 million miles. Well, what do you know?
I don't hear 3 million miles and immediately start
panicking
the way
I do.
I'm sure we'd need like a scientist to chime in, but like, if it does crash into the Earth, does the other side of the Earth feel it? I mean, what happens if it hit the other end of the globe? I don't know. What's the whiplash effect on a meteor hitting a planet?
I'm not sure.
If it hits Joliet, will I notice or am I good? What's the deal?
The Eisenhower is going to be a mess. I'll tell you that right now. Forget about getting out of town.
Yeah, do I need a plan to leave earlier to get to work or something if it's going to go on the other side of the planet?
I know a little bit about this. Their hope is that if we detected them soon enough, we would be able to, in some measure, evacuate some areas. But really, have you been to O'Hare? I mean, and we're not talking about going to St. Louis. You would need to be in Australia. And even then, the crops would all perish and we would all slowly die.
That's assuming it doesn't completely obliterate the planet. I mean,
just goodbye.
Just what do you get out of this, though, this thought spiral?
I know.
I just like the stories because I'm a space geek. I'm going to just be honest about that.
I'm a little bit of that.
I'm thrilled that you reported the story, but this... I think he takes it a couple more steps
in the right direction.
Like, hold on, does everyone know about this yet?
Okay. Inciting panic.
Well, I don't know what you're going to do. Don't pay your credit cards this month. I don't care. But I just think somebody needs to be thinking about this, and we all report it as or don't as sort of a curiosity. And I'm like, no, this is a cataclysm. Okay, I'm done now. I just thought I'd interject that.
Thanks for that.
Have a nice Saturday, everybody. In 3, 2, 1, woof. Why men great till they gotta be great? Don't text me, tell it straight to my face. Best friend set me down in the salon chair. Shampoo press get you out of my hair. Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hurts needed something more exciting.
From the start, hey, I'm glad you're back. Which I mean, who would want to hide this? I will never, ever, 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 ever be your side chick. I put the scene.
I know this voice script. Who am I listening to?
Lizzo.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, why are you playing Lizzo for us today, Griff?
Because that song is called Truth Hurts. It's the number one song in America.
What do you think of that? What do you think of Lizzo? What do you think of that song?
Well, I played her early, maybe in April, right before the summer.
Yeah.
And I predicted that she was poised to become a superstar. At that time, she was already pretty famous, but still rising, for sure. And I said that song that I played back then, called Juice, which was the first song from her new album, 'Cause I Love You, would be the song that put her over the top and maybe be the song of summer. This was before we knew about Old Town Road. Before Old Town Road came out of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
And I was wrong about that, because Juice is a moderate hit, but didn't top the charts like Truth Hurts now has. That's what this song is called, Truth Hurts. So I picked the wrong song, but my prediction was correct.
You were right about the artist, that's for sure.
Well, this song came out in 2017, 2 years ago.
Wow.
And it just hit the top of the chart last week.
How about that?
It's a weird thing.
That's okay. I mean, I'm sure she doesn't mind.
No, I don't think she does. No, I think it's fascinating, though, the way that songs, you know, like she and the label pushed this one song and decided that was the one that was, you know, they were really pushing this summer. But especially in an era of streaming, it doesn't matter what you decide. Things just kind of ebb and flow and can peak at different times, and there's kind of no predicting it.
Well, her personality, her appearance, I mean, she's really become a little bit of a cultural phenomenon herself, and that sure has kept the music in the conversation.
Yeah, and So she, I think she was poised to hit the top of the charts with some song, and it just happened to be this one. Old Town Road, yes, it lasted a long time. It was actually dethroned by Bad Guy, another song we played this summer by whatever her name is. I can't remember it now. But
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish, thank you. But now it's Lizzo, and yeah, what do you think?
I'm going 90 for the whole package and this song, too. I think it's all good. Are you with us on that, Joe Brand?
Yeah, I'll go a little bit higher, 95. I know wedding season is on its way towards the end, but that song is a huge hit on the buses and on the dance floor. It's getting big. And you know what? I've been covering some high school games, and every kid is singing that song in the bleachers, too. It's good. I like, because I can't believe you brought this up in April, Griff, because once you played it, I was just having flashbacks, and I thought it was just a couple of weeks ago, but... Because I remember last year really enjoying Good as Hell, and I know we talked about this before, and I didn't know that this song was 2 years old. I mean, that's crazy that it's taken that long to revive.
I actually talked about it with Juice, too, how Good as Hell did not become a number one
song,
and how strange that is, because it seems so perfectly poised. In a weird way, those were both too catchy and kind of too, I don't know, pressed and packaged as just obvious, immediate hit songs. This song is kind of weirder.
It is.
And is not as immediately identifiable as an obvious pop hit. I saw someone describe it on Twitter as, like, she sounds like she's in a tornado. It's just got this vocal line that goes up and down, and but she has good control of it. It's just funny. You can't guess these things.
I wonder if Joe's really dialed into this because he's got a wedding coming up, and so... He's thinking about playlists and stuff like that. Is that right, Joe?
That's funny you say that. I think I've got three different playlists right now for setting up the whole day. For the bus, we're getting a band, so I've got a referred playlist for the band. And then when the band takes breaks, I've got playlist for in between the breaks.
Does this one make the cut?
This one makes the party bus, for sure. 100%. It may have been one of the first ones I added to it, too.
Fair enough. So 1 to 100, Joe Brand gives it a 95. I gave it a 90. Griffin gives it a...
85.
I want to ask you guys one about sports. Joe, tell me if I've stolen your thunder here. 1 to 100. Major League Baseball this week passed the home run record for MLB in a season. And there's about 20 games to go, I think, when they did it. Are you liking this version of Major League Baseball this year?
I am. I really am.
1 to 100, what do you give that version of baseball?
This version of baseball, I mean, I'd like to see maybe a couple more years of it and see where we're at then, but I'll definitely give it an 85 right now. The steroid era was so huge because the two most exciting things in baseball are home runs and no hitters, and we're getting a better chance of that happening with this whole juiced ball era. And honestly, I enjoy it because, yes, there are more home runs, but pitching is not being whittled down to...
More strikeouts now.
Right, exactly.
Well.
I mean, because the talent from pitchers nowadays are as extreme as they've ever been and probably, you know, the best that may ever be. And then on the other side of it, all a guy needs to do is barrel it up, use his strength, and hey, it goes over the fence. I'm really enjoying this style of baseball right now. I might be in the minority. I'm such a big baseball geek that I just really enjoy the two extremes that are happening right now.
I don't like it at all. I'm giving it a 58.
Why not?
Just for all the reasons you described. Yesterday's Cubs game where they put up a football score.
Mm-hmm.
It was there were some home runs. There was a grand slam. But there was also innings where you had a
definitely
lot.
Definitely a Bears score.
It was. There were singles and doubles and rallies. I want to see more action. And I would trade fewer home runs for more rallies. You know, where you get a guy on, you get him over, you get him in. I mean, how many times have you watched Rizzo or Bryant strike out? I don't like my stars striking out, but that's what the price you pay for them going for home runs all the time.
Well, and that's basically what the trade-off is, because everyone was getting so upset about all these shifts happening and no action happening offensively, and whether or not baseball will ever admit that they altered the baseball so that we could get more offense. I mean, this is what you're getting now. You barrel up the baseball, it goes over the fence because the baseball is wound tighter and it just goes further. But it's not the player that's being enhanced. It's the tool, the sphere that is used in the game. And it's not affecting the pitchers in terms of how they throw or anything, just the results. I enjoy it. I really, like I said, again, the two extremes that are happening, I'm a fan of.
I'm wound a little tighter on this. Where are you, Griff? go on my site. Give it a low score.
Well, I don't have an opinion, really, but I do find your claim dubious that you don't like home runs. That
I'm shocked
home runs
that
are...
you wouldn't agree with me on something. Well, and why? Why do you say that?
Because it just doesn't sound true. Home runs are great.
All right, well, but, okay, home runs,
and I don't
yes.
think that they preclude rallies in the way that you... There's not that one-to-one thing that you're doing
there. It's not a zero-sum game? I wonder, though.
I don't think so.
Hey, Joe, before the show's over, we got 11 minutes. How many hits in baseball this year versus the same time for the last 20 years each season? Break it down. You've got 10 minutes. Go.
And you think it'll be less.
And I think you'll have less hits, but yeah. more home
that
runs.
That might be true. I don't know. I have not been watching this season very much, so I can't.
What do you guys think of this one? 1 to 100. Felicity Huffman goes to jail for 14 days. 100, that's justice. 0, she should have gone for longer. Or not at all. I mean, you know, do you agree with the 14-day sentence?
Yeah, I was kind of confused by the reaction to this online a little bit. Like, people were making fun of it, but I couldn't tell if it was... Because it should be longer. I don't.
It should be. It's almost like home runs or strikeouts. It should be more extreme. Either send her to jail for a couple of years because this is terrible, or don't send her to jail at all. What does 14 days do? That's a vacation.
It's a slap on the wrist.
It's a timeout. Yeah, I know. It's like
it's horrible. It is jail.
I'll bet the jail she's going to go to for 2 weeks. She's going to come out tanned and rested.
Well, that's the first thing that pops up on TMZ is Felicity Huffman's prison life will include tanning bed and bed making.
All right, so I think the sentence should have been longer or shorter, if you can believe that. But 14 days to me is the one sentence that makes everybody unhappy. I'm giving that a 38.
So you say you actually probably think she shouldn't go to jail at all.
That's correct.
No. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think the crime was that great.
I don't know. I think it's fine.
Joe, do you have anything?
Go for a couple weeks.
Go for a couple weeks. That's what you do when you travel with Steve Bertrand. That's not a sentence.
She was sentenced to a week in Ireland with Steve Bertrand. Oh, no.
Joe, do you have anything else to add to this?
Yeah, you took exactly what I was going to talk about with the Felicity Huffman thing. No, I'm kidding. I you know what? How about the whole Chance the Rapper thing? I mean, that's got to be a good move by him, you know, realizing there's only this amount of time to be a father when his second child has come, and he realized how much he missed out with his first child at this time frame, but a lot of people are probably upset from pushing his tour. I luckily am planning to go Saturday, so my date was not altered.
Oh, so he canceled the rest of his tour, though, huh?
He pushed it to January, but he was supposed to be at the United Center for 2 nights, but he's still going on Saturday, not Sunday.
Paternity leave for Chance the Rapper. How mm-hmm. nice.
There's a theory bouncing around that he has postponed the tour not to attend to his duties as a father, although now he gets to do that. That's great. Some people think it wasn't selling very well because of the muted reaction to his new album, and that might have factored in as
well. Really? So it's not getting a lot of good feedback, his album?
I don't know. It's really hard to tell. It did get a weird amount of backlash from some corners of the internet who are just like, Chance is over. Which was bound to happen sometime, and it had already kind of started before that album came out.
Lost his chance.
It's just a theory. I don't subscribe to it necessarily, but I've heard it.
I don't know if we're going to get a chance now to play some of Dave Chappelle ripping on Jussie Smollett. I presume you guys have heard that, right? And I'm just wondering if you liked it. It was good. It was good for America.
No, that bit particularly, I feel fine about. I don't love one particular section of it. Maybe we can come back to it another time. The special itself, I found hard to watch. I grew up watching Dave Chappelle. He was like a formative thinker, just a person in my life, cultural figure, especially comedian. I was obsessed, and I will always love him in some ways. But I've struggled with his recent output. I have.
I thought the Smollett thing was really good.
Smollett thing was pretty good. I had one particular issue with it, but it was pretty funny. I laughed at that. But the special, a lot of other stuff in it, I struggled with. And it hurts me to say that.
And he kind of opened up with a lot of touchy things. And yeah. In fact, I didn't even watch the whole thing.
He's always touched on controversial material. That's not... I don't think that's my issue, but it's just changed. We need to break.
But Joe, you were going to say...
I actually only have an abbreviated thought on it because I said I stopped watching it, but it wasn't the fact that I can't take this. I just kind of got disinterested after a few minutes. But so I haven't heard the Jesse Smollett gig that he did.
Well, let me give you 60 seconds after this. This is WGN. It's 1:57. We're out of time. But just play for me. The thing that I thought was very interesting about Dave Chappelle talking about Jesse Smollett was the fact that as smart and clever as Chappelle is, he just played with the name and got people to laugh for two uninterrupted almost minutes at the very fact that he was going to rip on Smollett and that he was going to make fun of his name.
Don't ever forget what happened to that French actor. Juicy Smollett is a very French, very famous French actor. Y'all never heard of Juicy Smollett? Juicy Smollett is an actor from France.
They laugh continuously at the very fact that he is going to talk about him and that he's just being silly with the name.
He'll never not be skilled as a comedian.
Oh, my gosh.
He's so comfortable on stage. It's
yes.
There's really no one like him in that regard. There's a line of thought that he proceeds to interrogate in that the ensuing 3 minutes that we don't have time to get to, sorry, that I struggled with. But he'll always be skilled at standing on stage talking to people. It's true.
Google it. It's a Netflix piece, and it just dropped this week. Okay, so WGN Radio News, Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then we go out to Northwestern University for a big pregame hoo-ha. That's all coming up.